I discovered the pleasure of writing when I was 9, which I have since learned is about the average age of discovery for most writers. This was the same time I was learning how to do a lot of different things, ride a bike, play football, add fractions, draw soldiers and tanks. But of all these things, only writing stood out to me as something I might want to keep doing when I grew up. For one, I seemed to be pretty good at it. How did I know this? The same way I knew I was good at anything back then. An adult told me so. Also, even though writing was something I learned how to do in school, I was happy to do it when I was out of school, which meant it didn't feel like work. As a teenager, I became quite serious about wanting to be a professional writer. Adults, and sometimes even my friends, still complimented my writing, but a quiet question had begun to worm its way into my mind. Did they mean I was actually good at this, or simply good for a teenager? If they found my stories in a magazine, would they feel the same about them? That, it seemed to me, was how you knew you were good, that you had what it took to be a real writer. By the time I was 20, a college composition professor had told me he looked forward to reading the reviews of my work in the New York Times. I'd also written a short story I was particularly pleased with. It was based on meeting and losing a girl I loved. It was the first time I'd written about something from my own life. Also, the ending surprised me. It was like the story had shown me why I was writing it. That was the first time that had ever happened. When I showed it to my mom, as I did all my stories then, she took it into her bedroom to read in private. When she finished, she chirped, "Oh, that's good!" And when my friend Gorham read it, he said, "That's like a story I'd read in a magazine." A writing teacher applauded when I finished reading it in class. And so, did I know then I was good enough? That I had what it took? Had all that praise and positivity answered that question once and for all? Not quite. I couldn't sell the story or the next one I wrote. I eventually published some poems, but just 3. When I wrote and performed a play and it got laughs and applause, it was still only in little dusty theaters in Providence. And when I was a quarterfinalist for the Nickel Fellowships in Screenwriting, I didn't actually win. Then I started writing novels. I was 25, and the novel occupied a special category in my mind. If you published a novel, then you absolutely had what it took, no question. Unfortunately, my first novel didn't sell, and my second novel didn't sell. And then my third novel did sell, but only to a tiny, 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 barely existent publisher. And then my fourth novel didn't sell either. With every passing year, and with every unpublished book, the questions grew louder and louder in my mind. What if I don't have what it takes? What if all this failure and disappointment is the consequence of some inherent deficiency in me? What if I am like a fish trying to climb a tree? No matter how much I wanted to reach the top, I was bound to earth by my nature. In the middle of all this, my youngest son, Jack, was diagnosed on the autism spectrum. Like most kids on the spectrum, he would retreat into an inner world where he was difficult to reach. I soon learned that the only way I could parent him was if I didn't see him as broken and try to fix him. I couldn't become transfixed by his odd behavior. I had to see beyond that veil, to the whole person who always lay beneath it. Except it was impossible for me to see him as whole, this kid who hummed and thumped on his chest when he was nervous, if I saw myself as broken because I wasn't successful, or if I saw someone else as broken because they were unkind. The only way I could see Jack as unbroken was if no one was broken, period. Learning to see people this way became a kind of practice.